Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
I'm not even feeling pessimistic. This is just a thing like the Great Depression that's going to impact us and change us and change the way that our children grow and change how we interact with one another. And, you know, for those of us who make it through this alive, when we're in our 80s and 90s and we're still compulsively washing our hands and reflexively social distancing and, you know, these other things, people are going to tease us about it. And they're like, oh, yeah, you old fart. That's from back when, you know, the COVID-19 epidemic happened. You know?
But hey, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. How are you doing? How are things going for you wherever you are in this city of Duluth, state of Minnesota, country, world? I hope you're doing okay and hanging in there and taking care of yourself. And by the nature of taking care of yourself, probably then taking care of a lot of people around you. And perhaps many others you will never know or never meet. The voice you just heard was Adeline Wright. She has been a guest on our podcast before. We recorded this last Friday, and I make that point just because everything shifts and changes every single day right now. So I feel like there is an importance or a potential benefit to sort of put a time stamp on that. Adeline has had a salon here in Duluth for 20 years, and so she's been a real solid part of the community. She's very active, politically active, and has created just an amazing space in the salon that she has had. And we're going to talk about that and how she's just really open to the idea of reimagining what things are going to look like on the other side of this, whenever that might be. She shares her optimism in the unknown, but it feels really digestible and hearable if you are somebody who is having a business and maybe freaking out right now, which I think is probably a human and common thing going on, pretty human thing to be doing in moments. She shares some suggestions that we can take away with us to help support people who have small businesses. Maybe they're on hold right now, or maybe they're limited. Ways we can think of supporting businesses and helping them out and get through these shifts and changes that we're all a part of in one way or another. And as you heard from the opening segment, we definitely talk about this very interesting time that we're in. It was an encouraging and hopeful conversation to have with Adeline. I hope you enjoy it too. Welcome back, Adeline. How are you?
Well, you know, I'm okay, but things are pretty weird, Judy.
They are really weird. They're very weird. The energy of the world is very, very strange right now. I think people are just in this space of, I don't quite know what to do. I don't know how severe I should be protecting myself, but this Corona COVID-19 is definitely marking a space on our world and calendar and life shift.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always, you know, a little ahead of the curve. I'm always a little bit alarmist. I was really nervous about this a month ago. You know, like when we were starting to see things happen and I was looking around and realizing that nobody was really preparing and people were placating and in denial. And I still think that's happening. You know, just reading what comes out every day from our governor's office and our mayor's office, clearly these people are working so hard to make sure that the impact to our community is as little as possible. But that being said, I think that we are going to be realistically experiencing the impact of what's happening right now for a minimum of 18 months to 2 years. And I think it's very unrealistic for businesses that were shut down specifically by health department orders that they're going to be open again on March 27th. So that's, you know, what I'm planning for my business, I guess, is accepting that my business is possibly going to look different on the backside of this pandemic than it did going in, and staying open to the reimagining process and not holding on to making it exactly how it was, because that is a huge mistake for businesses right now, is that attachment.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that we don't know what that looks like, but I think your point of being open and imaginative, and I think a lot of people are going to need help with that as time goes on, and help being open-minded about that, because it's your livelihood. Your livelihood is, you've built this thing that you're doing, and you know, whatever it is, or that you're trying to make work, or that you're, you know, managing to make work. What is that going to look like? Let's lay the groundwork just a little bit. So we're in Duluth, Minnesota. You have a salon called Adeline Inc.
Yes.
And you've been here for, how long have you had your salon?
Let me think. In November of 2021, is it November? I actually think it's June of 2021. I will have been open for business in Duluth for 20 years.
Wow.
So like, you've been completely uninterrupted.
Wow. That's awesome.
Like I've had a really good run, and it's been incredible. And I've built some really beautiful relationships that have shaped who I am. And I'm sure that I've been very, very lucky to participate in people's entire lives.
Yeah. Well, and you create that atmosphere. I mean, your salon is a very open, you know, it's a lovely place to hang out, right? Like, it's just a nice place to be. There are always great conversations going on, and really, and thoughtful conversations. I mean, it's it has all the meanings of salon just right there in one little place.
So that's one of the things I think is that I have to reimagine, because, you know, we're going to be dealing with waves of this virus, and I don't believe this is the last shutdown. Like, I think there's going to be kind of like multiple times as this thing goes around the globe where we're going to have to do social distancing practice in order to keep our health professionals and the hospitals from being overrun.
Right.
And with that being said, having a salon that has very much functioned like a salon, mm-hmm. where people sit in close proximity while they're, you know, at various stages of getting their hair done, or maybe they're just community members who have stopped in because it's a fun and friendly place to be, mm-hmm. Talking about important things and socializing. And I can't in good conscience open my doors again anytime soon with that model.
Isn't that a weird way for us to think? I mean, that's the thing. This is such a huge shift. And I, getting back to your statement of, you know, we don't know what the future holds, but I think there's a lot of just not, people are not realizing what seriousness we're potentially about to face. And I think at the same time, it's kind of like, so why not over prepare? Why not over preparing? And if we're wrong, we're wrong. But the reality is, if they were right and we all over prepared and nobody got sick, everybody would say, well, clearly you didn't need that. It's like, no.
Yeah.
That's how you solved the problem. If you seal the windows and the water doesn't come in, you didn't make a mistake by sealing the windows.
Yeah. People don't want to really understand the depths of this, because what we're seeing right now, the economic impact of what we're seeing right now, is the tip. Mm-hmm. It's the service workers. It's the, you know, it's the places where people gather. It's deeply impacting, you know, nonprofits and arts organizations and salons and tattoo shops and coffee shops and all of these places that are really like the icing on our cake. They're the places where we go to find community and to feel good. Mm-hmm. And when those people don't have money coming in, that impacts a lot. I mean, it's just going to be I don't want to be super doom and gloom, because I do think that on the very back end of all this, I hope people are very, very awake to the fact that this could have been lessened, if not prevented, if we were being governed by people who actually cared about people over profit. Mm-hmm. And it is, in my opinion, criminal negligence that we are witnessing. But on an economic point of view here, for our community, there are businesses that are so vital to our community that are not going to exist on the back end of this. There are going to be arts organizations and nonprofit organizations and things that we have been taking for granted that are going to be gone. And I think the grief is something that has to be anticipated. I think your thought of over-preparing you know, has to also come on an emotional level. Mm-hmm. Because I run my business, you know, I have a very, very successful business. I'm booked out right now until July. I'm not concerned that my clientele is going to go somewhere else, or that like they're going to cut their own hair and never come back to me. Or, you know, like I know that once my doors are open again, I'm going to be plenty busy. Mm-hmm. What I have to realize, you know, what's been really hard is that my business model itself isn't sustainable. Mm-hmm. I can't really afford to employ people probably on the back end of this. Oof. Until, you know, a future date, which means, you know, you've been to my salon and I have a coworker who is the right hand of that business. Mm-hmm. She is, you know, my dear friend and we work as a team, and there just isn't going to be a swift recovery. And so, you know, this job that I created for this person who I love dearly is going to be impacted in some way. And I'm hoping that I can still keep her semi-employed. Mm-hmm. But it's like I was at a growth point, and the rug being pulled out from under my business at this point really changes what that's going to look like. Mm. And I think that's probably the case for everybody else, every other small business owner that's living through this moment.
Yeah, it is. Like you say, it is to sort of be mindful of, we don't know how it's going to impact, but to be reasonably thinking that the social distance model is probably, we're not just going to go back to normal. I mean, just cannot imagine that we'll go back to normal. And part of my brain says we will. Like part of my brain says somehow we'll wake up and somebody will create a solution and we'll all be fine. But that's a really small part of my brain. The rest of my brain doesn't buy it. Like it doesn't feel true.
Because the world has already changed. I mean, we are already changed. And of course we think about and wish to go back to how things were. I'm not a person who tends towards pessimism here. And I'm not even feeling pessimistic. This is just a thing like the Great Depression that's going to impact us and change us and change the way that our children grow and change how we interact with one another. And, you know, for those of us who make it through this alive, when we're in our 80s and 90s and we're still compulsively washing our hands and reflexively social distancing and, you know, these other things, people are going to tease us about it. And they're like, oh yeah, you old fart. That's from back when, you know, the COVID-19 epidemic happened. You know? But I think what we are facing, and I think what people don't want to look at, is that if you imagine something like the Great Depression happening, which we were ripe for anyhow before this happened, mm-hmm. you know, based on our global economic capitalist structure, we're going to experience what the Great Depression would have been like while there was a pandemic going on. Mm. It's going to be a double whammy. And it's also the best time for this to happen because we have incredible scientists and incredible doctors and so many people around the world coming together to work to put together a vaccine, to put together treatments for this virus. Like if you imagine this happening 40, 50 years ago,
oh my gosh,
people would be so stumped. I mean, our technology that we have, that's where the optimism comes in, is that like we have resources we've never had before to deal with something like this. And yes, it's scary, but the majority of us will get through this, and a lot of people are going to die. And that's the thing I think people aren't fully digesting, is that, you know, yes, there's these huge economic impacts of extreme social distancing and shutting down businesses, which is in Minnesota, that is not going to stop anytime soon. I really expect our positive COVID numbers to jump. You know, I know Governor Walz even talked about that this morning. As our testing becomes more available, mm-hmm. and our death rates are going to go up, and we're going to have to prolong the social distancing to flatten the curve for a longer period of time because we weren't able to access what we needed to on the front end of this. And, you know, I just want to tell other business owners out there that you should really prepare yourselves for 8 weeks of not even really being able to be open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, when you think about it, there's just what would have to happen for this to like drop off in 2 weeks. I was just having a phone conversation the other day with somebody who said, you know, I said, oh, I think this is going to go well over 2 weeks. And they're like, really? And I was like, how is it possible for it to just end in 2 weeks? I mean, I think we have Italy who's screaming at us saying, you guys wake up, you know, and I think we just haven't got, well, this is America. It just can't happen here. Like, I don't quite know what our thinking is. But
I think it's misinformation. I mean, I think because we don't have a couple of common source trustworthy news organizations that we all listen to.
Yes.
Instead, we have this disgusting patchwork of sensationalist, you know, nonsense. And I think people over the years have really stopped listening. You know, everything's a pandemic. Everything's terrible. Yeah. The world is coming to an end. The sky is falling. And when you hear that over and over and over again, you no longer trust those media sources. And I think, you know, you also, with the huge political divide in our country, you also hear the people who, you know, are wishfully believing that this whole thing is a hoax just to discredit their president. Mm-hmm. You know, we all, oh yeah, it's a global hoax. All these people are dying just so that Donald Trump looks bad, you know, but I think that they're victims as well of an ongoing and steady brainwashing of and distrust that's been sown in the media and in our, you know, just in our communities for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And it's going to make things way worse in the United States. We don't have that, you know, we're doing this patchwork community by community. And yeah. We're in a tough spot.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I do think that there is nobody really knows who to trust. And so nobody trusts anybody. And everybody's kind of in their own field of, in their own bubble of what they're believing or what they think they can believe or should believe. And people don't want to look stupid. I think that's another thing too, that, you know, people don't want to overboard and look stupid and not realizing that that's not just risking your life. That is risking people you have never met before's life, you know?
And we're not good with abstract concepts.
Right.
Like, so when you remove one person or two people and you say, well, we have to do something right now for these two people over there that you've never met before. People are like so narcissistic, you know, they're just, and it's not that they're narcissistic in a bad way, but we all kind of think of ourselves. And this is the functionality of our society is not really to think like, okay, how is my behavior actually impacting those around me? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that we are, you know, 10 days from seeing some of the scariest, worst things we've ever seen. And I don't know how we as a community in Duluth, you know, where we have this gorgeous lake and spring is on its way. And, you know, this is a time of awakening and celebration typically for our community. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how we're going to be impacted. I don't know that the National Guard is going to roll down our streets and force everybody into their homes, or if we're still going to be allowed to go down to the lake. You know, like these are little things, but you bet in major cities across America where they can't control the population to stay inside, that's what's going to happen. And it's already happening in other countries. And it probably needs to happen. Because we have this divide of people who either are like, you know, early adopters like me, where I went and ordered my toilet paper early and made hand sanitizer in gallon-sized jugs. And, you know. Yeah, so we have the early adopters who are paying attention and who maybe err on the side of caution and, you know, understand how interconnected we are. And then we have the people who are in denial. And those people are at some point going to weaponize this. They're going to be pissed off. They're going to think it's a conspiracy and they're going to go around and they're going to try to get into people's personal spaces, or they're going to spit on people, mm-hmm. or they're going to, you know, they're going to do things, because we live in these times where all that stuff is already happening. People are inflamed.
I was just having a conversation with Joel, who went to the grocery store yesterday, and he said, you know, it's weird because we're at a time in the grocery store he's at in winter, it's all people from that town. In summer, it's people from outside. And he said, it was just the weirdness that, yes, people were there, but there was this sort of like coldness to everybody. And, you know, and I said, you know, it's probably that whole, you just don't always know the other person. You don't know what to expect. And if you're afraid to communicate with them, because if they get in your space, then you have to ask them to get out of your space, or you have to back up. And we're not good with that here. we don't know how to do that or advocate for ourselves sometimes. And to do it kindly is sometimes hard when you're slightly freaked out and you're embarrassed about maybe even being freaked out, because you don't want to be that person who's going over the top. But you really kind of want people out of your space. So it's kind of like putting up this little wall. Well, if I don't communicate, I don't smile, and I don't look at anybody, everybody will just stay to themselves, and it's safer that way. We're going to have to learn how to do that really differently as time goes forward. But I think there is, I mean, I know I walked here this morning, and it's about a mile or so walk, and I ran into like nobody but two people, you know, and we just gave each other, you know, a wide berth and kept going. But it's just a weird space that we don't know how to navigate in. And we haven't had this kind of scare in our lifetime for many, many years to really understand what does this mean. And I think, you know, again, you look at people in Italy and other countries who are getting what we're probably going to get. It's just hard to imagine that, but I would not blame our governor or whoever if they said, you know what, we're just going to take the measure. I mean, I understand the economic impact is huge, and I'm not trying to make that minimization of that at all. But to just say, you know what, we're just going to try to slow this thing down, really pushing that, because it's hard to hear, well, we'll see where we go, and as the cases rise, which I get, I wouldn't want to be these people making decisions at all. We know that it can last 14 days before it shows symptoms. We know people can be asymptomatic.
And the majority of people are asymptomatic. And the asymptomatic people, 5 days into the development of the virus in their body, are the most contagious, but they don't have any symptoms.
Right.
So they're not even tired. They're just feeling good and out there spitting
doing
on
life.
Everything.
Right.
It is kind of interesting. I think, you know, oftentimes I like to think in my head, like, okay, if I was in a position of leadership right now, like, how would I do things differently? And I feel really good about our leadership right now. I think they're comprehensive. I think they're doing what they can. I think they're walking that fine line of balance between, you know, creating pandemonium and panic and informing people. I do think that in Minnesota in particular, it is wise to roll these things out in little increments.
Mm.
I think people can take it in small pieces where they can't take, like, hey, everyone, you're going to be stuck in your house for all of April. You know, like, people aren't going to be okay with that, even though that may very well be the reality. Or they're going to set us out some really clear guidelines, like, okay, Minnesota's a pretty big place. If you're not in a super concentrated urban setting, like, absolutely go for a walk, go to the park, go out to the state parks, like, go do things. Just, you know, you're not going to have bathroom access, and you're not going to, I don't know, just kind of give us some really good guidelines of how we are to live through this time.
Yeah.
And we have to demand at the federal level and at the state level that businesses like mine and other small businesses, especially businesses that have less than 50 employees, we do not have a safety net. I do not have a safety net. And I also can't apply for unemployment because I'm an employer.
Right, right. Yeah, I was wondering about that. There is no sources for you.
No. If I wouldn't have sold my house this year and put some of that money into a CD, which I now have to draw off of, which is a bummer because I lose that, you know, I take a penalty on that.
Yeah.
But if I wouldn't have done that, exactly when I did, I would be like, I would have to either take out a massive loan, or I would be just like $0 broke within a couple of weeks. And I and as a business owner, I've protected myself from like breaking a wrist or like needing a surgery. I have short term and long term disability, but that doesn't cover this. And my business insurance does not cover this. It covers if my business like it experienced a fire or if it experienced a robbery or some other reason that I had to shut down. There's money that would kick in to cover things, not a pandemic, not a forced closure by the government, which I'm grateful happened. But, you know, these are, this is part of the reason why we need to look at our insurance industry as a whole. I think a lot of people think, oh, I don't want to pay more in taxes. Like, well, you know, if a lot of these things were rolled in, like one of the things that I have to consider is that I pay monthly for my, me and my other employee to have group health insurance. And I contribute 100% to both policies.
Okay.
So now that we have no income coming in, but we're facing a pandemic and the reality that one of us could get sick or both of us could get sick and end up hospitalized, if I don't pay that premium and I don't pay for that policy, we don't have insurance. Mm-hmm. But there's no income coming in. One of the things I think is very sweet is that, you know, I put out a post on Facebook 2 days ago. You know, everybody's asking, oh, can we buy gift certificates now and use them later for your business? Would that be helpful? And I think a lot of business owners are like, yes, please. Like, we need money now. Stop the bleeding. Mm-hmm. I think that's very short-sighted because if a bunch of people buy hundreds of dollars worth of gift cards right now, and then they all come in and redeem them in early June when we're just starting to get our engines going again, it's actually going to set our progress back. And so what I posted yesterday and what I've been asking people who want to support me to do is to buy a gift certificate from me or any other business in Duluth and cut it up. Don't use it. It doesn't need to be a time for opportunism. It needs to be a time for gifts. And I also put out there that anybody who has lost their job or who has been financially impacted, now is not the time to be generous. Like, there are large numbers of people in our community who aren't financially impacted yet by this. And we need them now more than ever to step up and to give us even the tiniest little bits that they can, $10, $15 here and there, support the restaurants. You know, the restaurants that are the most at risk are the restaurants that we love the most. It's Sarah's Table. It's Zeitgeist. It's Luce. You know, right. It's Northern Water Smokehouse. It's Sir Ben's. Like, these places rely on day-to-day income and cash flow. And I think it's just going to be pretty devastating on the backside of this to see who's able to survive. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I cannot even imagine. I mean, I'm doing my podcast, one of the things that I always, of course, mention is, you know, is the Patreon support. And I've like had the thought of kind of feeling guilty. I'm like, well, but, and then I was listening to another podcast and they were saying like, look, man, we need your support even more now. If you have the ability to keep this thing going, please, the part-time income that I do have is gone and the potential income for new classes is gone. So sitting there, it's like, it's kind of like, I feel bad for asking because I know there's a lot of people in really tough boats, but I also know there's a lot of people who aren't and who are able to support. And I need to remember that and think about that in that time as well, because...
Well, and people are going to be listening to more podcasts now. It's the use is up. And I'll tell you this, Judy, when I was looking through my... So one of the first things I did when I realized that this was dire and things were happening is I went through my bank accounts and I stopped all automatic payments that are coming out of my account and I didn't stop my Patreon once because I do think it's important to, you know, people who are creating podcasts are artists, people who are, you know, they're journalists, they're people who are doing really important work. And I think it is important to keep, if you can, keep funding your Patreon contributions.
Well, and thank you for that, by the way. I really do appreciate that. Because it's in this weird space where you kind of feel like, where do I fit into this whole scheme of things, you know?
Oh, I felt super weird saying like, yeah, buy gift certificates and then don't use them. Mm-hmm. But I've been open in Duluth for such a long time. I have given out so many on the house haircuts and thousands of hours of love and advice and, you know, done so many things in my community without any thought of, you know, my personal gain financially. That's what I have to remind myself of, is that I'm in a position right now where the water is flowing out of my cup really fast. And if you can give from a full cup, do it. But for those of us who are having the rug completely pulled out from under us, we need the help right now. It shouldn't be something that needs to be repaid.
Yeah, I think that is a really good thought and perspective and a helpful perspective, because I think people are kind of like, what do I do? How do you really help somebody? But you're right. The use of the gift certificate or the purchase of the gift certificate without the expectation of using it is really helpful, because you are just supporting. That support means a lot. It really does. I think that's great advice.
Well, I think about like, okay, I see these wonderful people that are my clients. I see them every month, every other month, every third month, you know, on a regular basis. I have spent more time in my life with hundreds of my clients than I've spent with my family. And these people value me. I know they value me, and mm-hmm. they know that I love and value them. And I know they're going to want there to be an Adeline's on the back side of this. And I have already been receiving gifts from people. And it's so humbling and so beautiful. And I'm so floored and grateful. And it's all part of the way we do things for each other. Like, I have shown up in huge ways for people at times where they have been down. And it doesn't necessarily come tit for tat.
Right.
It's like you get, you know, people are generous when they can be, and then they might be paying it forward in a different way. And yeah,
well, that's how it works.
Yeah. That,
you know, it's not, you can't, it can't just be it tit for tat, because that's a really stressful way to try to figure out how to do that. But if we can give of ourselves in the ways to each other that we can, that is most beneficial to them, to whoever needs us at the time, we all win.
And it doesn't have to be transactional, you know, it can be just a gift. And you better bet that, like, the people that I see on a regular basis, my massage therapist, you know, like, the people that I really count on to know me and to care about me and, you know, who work with me at times of great vulnerability, I'm going to pay it forward to them soon. And, you know, one of the other things is, like, as I'm looking at the structure of my business on the backside of this, I have so many young people that come to the salon that, you know, a lot of them see Galilee, my daughter, who is a junior hairstylist and my apprentice. A lot of my younger clients, they're being impacted by this. You know, they don't have any work, or they're having to move home and live with their parents. And any of my existing clients, and we're going to do a pay what you can model once we reopen, anybody who's been significantly impacted. Because one of the things I did during the recession was I noticed that, you know, probably like 10 or 15 of my hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of clients had lost their jobs. And they were like, well, I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to cancel my appointment. I can't come to you anymore. I just can't afford it. I'm like, no, you're not gonna cancel your appointment. I'm gonna do your hair for free. And then when you're back on your feet, you pay me again and it'll be fine, because you're not gonna go find a new job with bad hair.
And, right.
You know, and also the relationship is more important to me than, you know, the customer shop owner relationship. It's like the human relationship is at the foundation of my business. And so, you know, that's another reason why I say it's time for gifts, because all the business owners who are impacted, these are generous people. Mm-hmm. Like, you think about Vikra, you think about Marshall Hardware, you think about, you know, places where it's not just a business. It's a beloved place in our community where real life happens. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm a little freaked out by the whole thing, but I think I'll be okay, but I have to surrender into it and let this kind of shape me and let it inspire me to create something on the backside of this that's more sustainable and even better for my community.
Right. And this is going to be a crazy time that I think no matter what we do, it's going to shake out weird and very complex, and nobody's going to come out unscathed in some ways.
Yeah.
This is weird times, and I don't think the conversation isn't over. I mean, I think this is a conversation that's going to shift and change for the next multiple months, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think it'd be really fun if every couple of weeks we have this conversation again and kind of see how things are changing. I mean, yeah. I think one of the things that, you know, a lot of people like, okay, so I run a family business, which means my husband works at the salon and my daughter. Mm-hmm. And because we aren't able to be open and operational, all three of us lost our jobs.
Right.
And we have a meager savings that will float us for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not.
And you realistically know that there's a lot of people that don't even have that.
Before
That's
I
scary.
Sold my house, I wouldn't have had it.
Right, exactly.
It's really scary. It's super scary.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing about, you know, is that I know that I mean, there's a lot of fear. And it's understandable fear. I mean, you can't just walk into this and be like, we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
How do we get through this in the best way we can?
Right. I was thinking about I have two car payments, one on the car that my daughter drives and one on the car that my husband and I share. And I was on the phone for an hour and 40 minutes on hold with the financing, Subaru financing, and never got through to them. Because what the other thing is people probably aren't fully digesting is that, okay, so say you have a new car and you can't make your car payment. It would be in the best interest of the car lenders, you know, the lenders of these dealerships to, you know, basically freeze people's payments for the next 6 months or the next 4 months. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise they're going to have a glut of cars that they have to repossess. And it's going to impact everybody's credit rating. You know, these are the like little tiny things like there's, and you're going to see people profiteering. You're going to see people predatory lending. You're going to see people, you know, looking for a deal and hoarding and looting. And, you know, there's going to be some gross things, but I feel very, very, very happy to be in Duluth. And, you know, I let myself walk to the edges of worst case scenario. Okay, so say my cars get repossessed. I can walk to work. Mm. I can walk everywhere I need to go. I have the beautiful lake. I have my work. I have a down coat that goes to the floor. I can walk anywhere I need to go. You know, just kind of really letting myself think about the absolute worst case scenario here. And it's pretty terrifying. But we are all in it together. And that's a unique situation. There are people who come to these places in their lives because of health related bankruptcies or other things. And the rest of us just go on like everything's fine. And, you know, there are people before this pandemic that were in our communities that were losing everything at a time where they were facing disease and illness. And it really shines the light on that we need to be doing better all the time and not just in response to an emergency.
Right. Exactly. No, that's very, very true. I've had similar thoughts of the whole point of going through this together and, well, what are we going to do? And it's a shame that we can't think about things more kindly, that some of the businesses and things like that, that when somebody really is in trouble, that we can't do a little more to help them, but we're in a position where we cannot, there's just no way. Like, I'm thinking of the people who can't pay their rent. And like you say, the car payments, there's not enough people to come and take their stuff and to push them out and to clean the apartments and to, you know, and where are they going to go? And if people do that stuff, you're just raising havoc in the community that is creating a situation that is going to make it so much harder for it to recover or for people to recover. And that's not helping anybody.
No, it's not helping anybody. I mean, that'd be like basically creating a, you know, a really dystopic sort of large apartment buildings abandoned, you know, just kind of creating situations that aren't really good for the health of the local economy. And
right.
You're right. It doesn't really make sense.
No, we have to look at things different. And you know, I'm sure nobody quite knows what that is yet, because we haven't gotten far enough.
I mean, money is a construct.
Yes.
The government can totally help us here. They could really realistically give every household a couple $1,000s a month and keep those payments coming to the car industry. You know, like we're so intrinsically tied together, and we are getting an opportunity to really see that in action. And that's where I'm super optimistic. I really think once we walk through this fire all together, the conversations are going to be completely different.
I think so, you know, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This idea of, you know, this idea of democratic socialism, which I prefer to just call actual democracy, will no longer be a bad word. People will be like, oh, that actually does make sense. Like that we pool our resources and that we take better care of each other in times of good, so that when things are bad, the impact is less.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking this could create some very interesting opportunities for new conversations and for people to hear differently instead of just shut down the conversation. And hopefully open their minds to thinking a little more critically, even just asking the questions and hearing answers, because we're at a point where many people are not hearing other people's perspectives. But I think in the last week, I think that is probably shifting. And yeah, I mean, yeah. As I've seen so many memes on Facebook come by of commentaries about, you know, well, nobody wants socialism until something like this happens. And then all of a sudden, no, now you have to give me healthcare because I deserve it. Oh, well, wait a minute. 2 weeks ago, you didn't think that way, you know. Yeah. Well, so how do we rehab that conversation?
Right. It's that foundation, that lie that we've been told our entire lives for generations now of staunch individualism, and that you pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and that we aren't connected to one another, and that everybody has created their wealth on their own and are doing it. And it's just bullshit, you know, right. It's just total bullshit. And you know, I tried not to swear on this podcast, but
whatever.
Uncharacteristic of me, Judy. It'd be really uncharacteristic. I did refrain from using the F word. I hope everybody has noticed. You know, I think that, yeah, I think we have so much love in our community and so many incredibly intelligent and caring people that are in positions of leadership. I think that this is, for us, the best possible place to be. And it's still going to be really hard. Mm-hmm. But our community is generous and kind and loving. And, you know, for the most part, really aware that we are all interconnected. I had my daughter move back from St. Paul a week and a half, well, I guess a week ago now, because like, there's no way she could have faced this on her own down there.
Yeah.
It's just going to be, you know, it's going to be even harder down there, especially for people who don't have close loved ones. And yeah, I mean, we're basically kind of crammed into a one bedroom apartment. You know, I'm pretending we're the boxcar children. Like it's really interesting. Like she's able to do some house sitting for a couple of weeks right now nearby.
Oh, nice.
But her apartment doesn't open until June 1st. And I just think these are decisions I didn't think I was going to have to make a couple weeks ago. Like just a couple weeks ago, I was sitting at Zeitgeist eating my soup after work and laughing and talking and feeling so fuzzy and warm and grateful and planning future, you know, Sober Duluth events with my friend Jess, who's incredible. And, you know, just really not. Like this was in the back of my mind. I knew something was coming, but I was also still probably 50% not thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And now it's all I can think about. Yeah.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Being in Duluth I'm happy to be here because of what you said, because I can walk to the places that I need to, and I can, you know, I can get things done much easier than I could have if I was living in the cities as a non-driving individual.
Yeah.
I have much more autonomy, and I'm so grateful for that. we do have a very connected community of wonderful people up here. And certainly I see the other side of things too, where people are, oh, for crying out loud, people get over it about washing your hands. You know, I've heard that said too. And I, you know, I fear for those people, and I fear for those people that end up with their germs, because I think it's a tough place, and it's hard to talk to somebody about that.
Well, and honestly, I think it's just, you know, what's happening in other countries. I mean, in Norway, they're arresting people who behave like that.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So what, I don't know how that's going to work in the United States, but if you're tested and you're positive for coronavirus, whether you have symptoms or not, mm-hmm. which they do test you if they are going to arrest you.
Okay.
In these other countries, like, basically they're saying that, you know, that's what I was saying, that people could weaponize this. You can get charged in Italy 1 to 12 years for homicide if you are positive and found out in your community, because people have, you know, there's been, of course, like that rogue jerk who's just like, ha ha ha, I'm going to spread this everywhere. You know, like, it's a hoax, like, whatever. It's just like the flu. It's extremely dangerous. And I think that's something that in our community, we're probably not going to see policing on that level, which would be terrifying, and I don't want to see it. Right. But yeah, it's really frustrating to know how to deal with people who are burying their heads in the sand, because they don't realize that they're not just burying their heads in the sand, they're actually putting others at risk. Right. And it will have to be dealt with at some point.
Well, right. It is. It's a scary thing when somebody just doesn't take it seriously, and they're like, "Well, I'm young. I will be okay." And it's like, "No, this isn't about you." Doctors, I mean, some of the stuff I've read from the doctors in Italy, they're saying, "No, this isn't just for old people." And, you know, we have young people in the hospital who are damaged because of this. This is, you know, mm-hmm. and I know when something happens, yes, a certain amount of people die every year, the flu, that's what happens. But why do we have to just be careless about it?
Because, well, yeah, we don't know. Because the president of the United States was lying to us about it, you know? Well, I mean, right? Like, yeah,
that's been
you
hard
and
to
I
take.
Know that,
yes.
Oh, ha ha ha, yeah, whatever. But we also live in a country where it would be nice to be able to trust the president. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do trust the president. And the media also grabs onto what he says. And there was a pretty vast misinformation campaign going on over the last couple weeks,
right,
until it became clear that we couldn't ignore it. And that is unacceptable. And so in a way, all these people that are, if they're disbelievers, but they're not personally aware that they're sick and weaponizing it, they're victims. And it's really it's going to be a hard thing for us to deal with. We don't live in an authoritarian regime, and we're not going to be able to handle it in that way. Thank goodness. But we are going to have a different kind of reality because of that.
Well, it's an interesting thing to think about in the laws over there. I just, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, if you are diagnosed with HIV, I don't quite know what the exact laws are now, but I know at some point not too long in the past, you signed a document that basically said, if you don't tell somebody that you have HIV before you have sex with them, you are, I don't know if it's a felony, but you're basically taking responsibility for saying, I am now responsible for this. And if I hurt somebody else with it, it becomes, like you say, it becomes a weapon. It's like rubbing a peanut butter sandwich under a kid's nose who's got a peanut allergy. It's all of those things. We have this disconnect. I feel like there's this disconnect, and I don't know if it's America or humans or what, but and I do think it's very American in a lot of ways, about what we can't see. If we can't see it with our naked eye, it really doesn't quite exist. For the amount of people that I've heard say, well, but we don't have it up here in Duluth. We don't have it in St. Louis County, so we shouldn't have to worry about it yet. It's like, if it gets here and it's you, how are you going to feel about that when you're sitting in the hospital?
Also, we do have it here. We just don't have the testing.
Hey, I'm just hopping in to smooth out an editing transition that I had to make. Edeline is sharing a story with us about somebody that she has some knowledge about their situation. And I think this is just important to share, because this is something that I think there's still people that are kind of in the, why are we isolating so much? What is this about? We only have one case in St. Louis County. And wherever you are, whether you're in Duluth, Minnesota, or anywhere else in the world where this doesn't make a whole lot of sense to you, especially if it's in an area that you don't have testing, like we do not have testing, this chain of potential people infected with the virus, but we can't know because we don't have tests, might help illustrate that. If we didn't have the ability to test for cancer, does that still mean that somebody doesn't have cancer? If you've known anybody who feels pretty darn good and ends up at the doctor and discovers that they have an aggressive stage 4 cancer, you might begin to understand how that all makes sense. Except in the case of the coronavirus, this is something that you're giving to other people unknowingly, unmeaningfully, and it's a spectrum of symptomless to dying. So this is a very complex little virus we're dealing with. All right, we're going to hop back in with Adeline mid-story.
Basically, she's quarantined, like we're all quarantined, but she's actually quarantined as a presumptive case.
Really?
Because there is not testing. And because she hasn't personally traveled somewhere and hasn't personally come in contact with somebody who has been personally diagnosed with this, mm-hmm. they can't test her based on the limited test that we have. So,
wow. Yeah.
And I know lots of other people who are also dealing with that, that have the symptoms, that have an illness and are not getting tested. They have thousands of frozen samples of tests. I am sure that it is widespread throughout the state already. And it's just ridiculous that people can't, you know, they're like, oh, it just hasn't made it up here yet. Whatever.
Yeah.
We're not testing for it. And it's not anybody's fault other than the federal government that we don't have the tests that we need. You know, so we can't even, it's not like we can be mad at our local doctors or nurses
right.
or testing facilities or the governor or whatever. Like, we do not have the tests needed. And as those tests become available, you're going to see a lot more.
I so don't doubt that. It would blow my mind if we don't have any up here, quite frankly. It really would.
I think that's again, an almost accidental misinformation campaign. I don't want there to be a bunch of cases up here. Mm-hmm. But I want them to be able to test people so that we can actually get an accurate understanding of how many people in our community are affected.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and celebrity, I mean, it's interesting to hear the people who I just
can
heard
get
something.
Tested.
They basically have said, I'm asymptomatic, but I have a test and I'm positive. And it's like, oh, so you got the test, right? So we know that that's happening. And
yeah, I mean, the idea of controlling this is, you know, it's not a how do we keep it out of here? It's a harm reduction model that needs to be adopted like that. Right. And that's what we're doing. And I think right. Duluthians are they're conscientious. And I think early on businesses, like I closed my business several days before the governor called for it mm-hmm. because I was like, this doesn't make sense. I can't stand behind my client with my mild cough symptoms that are, you know, have been with me for 2 months.
Right.
And I don't have masks and they say they're not helpful anyhow. And my client could have been asymptomatic or gone on a cruise. You know, I have so many clients that come right off of vacation from all over the world.
Right.
There's no way that they haven't been exposed. Yeah.
When you think about the track, like the thing that we can't necessarily visualize is if somebody was tested positive and they could magically tell us where it came from, A, it would be wonderful because we really start to know how these things get transferred, but B, it would start to really create that reality. And I know there's simulations of people trying to sort of do that, but you think about your little salon, like the amount of intersection of countries and people and places that walk through there.
Yeah.
And it's a clean place. I mean, and you're careful, you know,
yes.
But it's still realistic to say this could be transferred. So it's an interesting thing when we're, you know, when we're thinking about supporting our food places. I know I've had a few conversations with people saying, I trust the people that I'm buying my food from, but is it best case scenario to just not eat out? Because the reality is we just don't quite know how crazy this is and we probably don't realize it. And I still believe those people are doing the absolute best they can.
Yeah. I mean, the way I think about it is that this is in the community. We are all going to be exposed to this virus within the next 18 months. It's not a matter of trying to not catch the virus at this point. It's a matter of trying to not catch it all at once.
Right.
And I'm taking precautions. We are you know, basically housebound. We have neighbors that live in an apartment upstairs that we've had a very frank conversation with about, like, okay, if we want to be able to have some social life in the next 2 to 4 to 6 to 8 weeks with people other than just me and my husband and my daughter, we need to be on the same page. And I think having just a few people that are taking good care of themselves, that are washing their hands, that are, you know, like trying to stay safe, is the best case scenario. But also, we're all going to be, we are all going to get this virus. I think they said like 60 or 70% of the global population will have this virus or have had it in their bodies within the next 18 months. So,
and that doesn't mean, to your point of what you just said a little bit ago, that doesn't mean throw up your hands and say, well, whatever, I'm going to get it anyway.
No.
Because of exactly what you're saying. It's, I don't want to catch it at the height when the hospitals are freaking out trying to figure out. I mean, there's the point of, well, is getting it, again, not trying to orchestrate anything, but getting it now. The advantages are people are not in the hospital with it. The disadvantages is still, we don't have the tests. We don't have the tools, perhaps. Yeah. Again, that flatten the curve piece is really important in all of this.
Yeah, I think that social distancing is really important and also staying sane. And, you know, I'm lucky that I'm not immunocompromised. And, you know, it's very possible, you know, since we don't know how many people up here have it or who has it or who doesn't, mm-hmm. you know, there's no way of knowing if I already have had it.
Right.
Or if I am going to get it next week or what.
Right. Right. There's a lot of don't knows, but there's a lot of, hey, yeah. don't use that as the excuse of, well, it doesn't matter. You know, the kind of the mindset of, well, you have to die from something kind of thing, because it's, again, it's not just about you. It's about all of the people that didn't make that choice. And whom don't have the funds or don't have the whatevers to, and the resources and the people and the help and the family. And the, I mean, I just, like, you know, for me, I'm like, it's the process of being in the hospital that I'm not a fan. I don't want to do that.
No.
I can't look at it and go, well, I'll probably get it. It'll be fine. I'm like, yeah, maybe, but I want the best case scenario on getting the help I need, because if I'm asymptomatic, yay, but I really want to know I have it so I'm not hurting other people. And B, if I get it, I want the best resources available. And the longer we wait, hopefully the more things we know and the more help there is and the more ease to get through it there is.
Exactly.
Sounds like a pretty good deal to me if one has to have it in their body.
Yeah. Well, and you know, unfortunately we had 3 months to prepare for this at the federal level and we didn't. So, you know, again, kind of a problem.
And how many people have already profited off this? I mean, we're seeing the story come across that is, speaking of criminal, is horrible and painful to think that we have people who are so disinterested in the people that they govern, that it's so much about them, that it's just, that's what's hard to take for me in a lot of this. It's just like, I want to trust that there are people out there doing the best for us, and there are, but they're not, that it takes a lot of power. Those, the people,
well, we have to be willing to vote for them.
Yes.
Because they're out there and they're working their asses off, but we have to be willing to vote for them. Yeah.
What other words of advice do you have or resources, either for those people who are kind of freaking out in small businesses or the people who want to support them?
Well, really for people who want to support small businesses right now in our community, make purchases from their online stores if you can. For the restaurants, absolutely get curbside pickup. I think it's a very reasonable and safe thing to do. And buy gift certificates if that's what the business is asking for. In my opinion, if you do buy a gift certificate from a local business and you can afford to, I would cut that up and not use it. I think it's really important to reiterate that this is a time where we all need people to give us gifts without any kind of redeeming that gift on the backside. Like, we need generosity from people who aren't losing their livelihoods right now to help keep us afloat so that we can reopen again. Because I think what a lot of people may not be realizing is that a lot of the small businesses that are impacted right now may not actually be able to weather this storm without their help.
That makes sense. Yeah. Any words of wisdom for those people who have businesses who are just not sure what their future holds?
Stay strong. reimagine a new future for yourself. Don't despair. If you were an entrepreneur once, you can be an entrepreneur again. I had the experience of losing my business at one point and having to start over from scratch kind of midway through my career. And it was a difficult time, but it really strengthened me and galvanized the direction I wanted my business to go in. And I think if we look at the lesson here and the opportunity, business will change, but we will be okay. But we're going to have to be okay with the new normal because the world has already changed.
Thank you. That's helpful. I mean, I think it is. And knowing that you're not alone out there, that there is, I think that's helpful for me to kind of go, I have no idea what my future holds, but you know what? Not alone.
Yeah, not alone. We are all swimming in the mud right now, trying to figure that out. Yeah. It's interesting times. And I'm so glad that spring is just around the corner. I think if we were dealing with this heading into a long winter, I think it would be really devastating.
I think
But keep loving each other from a distance.
Yes, lots of virtual hugs. They're not the same, but they help.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Adeline, so much.
Thank you, Judy. Thanks for having me on the show again.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for all the stuff you're putting out there on Facebook and trying to help put the good information out there. So thank you.
I'm trying. And let's do this again in a couple weeks and see where we're at.
Awesome. That sounds good.
Okay. Thanks, Judy.
Thanks for all you do.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Another idea that came to my attention from another small business owner whose business is a bit on hold right now is it's a great time to post reviews on Google, on that business's website, whatever makes sense. Something that sometimes we don't necessarily get around to doing, but can be really, really helpful for businesses, as well as yours truly and the podcast. It is very helpful to have reviews on iTunes and other places, or even sending in a testimonial or a review if you don't know where to post it. Those things can be really, really helpful. Yelp is another one. Not so much for my podcast, but I'm thinking, people are sometimes looking for food right now a little differently. So it might be a good opportunity to share your experience on Yelp or platforms like that. Could be really helpful as businesses are kind of trying to keep themselves afloat and could use some good positive words when they're out there, in a sense, risking themselves to get folks food. I appreciate Adeline's discussion about sensationalized media. I think that is absolutely something that has kind of really messed with our heads. Everybody is trying to create a headline that draws people's attention, that gets them to click, that gets them money. And the truth and reality of news is kind of lost. I was just at a convention. So when she said this, it really brought it to mind. I was just at a convention and a woman was talking about how to sell stories and how to get attention for whatever it is that you're doing, the headlines that you're trying to create, the titles that you're giving, your stories, and even your podcast episodes. And this is a woman who has had her own television show. She's, very successful in media. And one of the things that she basically said is you pretty much need to create in your headline the urgency as if somebody is going to die. And so thinking about how that plays out and how that has kind of desensitized us from a certain aspect of reality, I think. I've mentioned the book, Trust Me, I'm Lying. I can't remember the author's name right now, but it's basically his story about working in journalism and how it is all about sensationalization of headlines and it's not about truth. And it's kind of disgusting and scary. I would love to see that shift and change as we move forward through the time of coronavirus. I don't know if it's possible, but it sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you find value in the podcast, in this episode. And I want to send out a huge and heartfelt thank you to all of the people who are supporting the podcast. It means so much, especially in this time of very unsureness about everything. Unsureness, I'm not sure it's a word, but I guess it is now. I want to thank you so much for supporting. It's huge. It means a lot. And if you are somebody who is able to support the podcast at this time,
It's huge. It truly means a lot. It is not only pays the bills to keep the podcast running, it's also about food and shelter at this point in time too. So thank you, thank you, thank you. To do that, you can go to the podcast website, wellnessrenpodcast.com, and there is a button on the left, big red button that says become a patron, and that button is going to take you to the Patreon website. And Patreon, well, I'll spare you the big story. If you have questions, you are absolutely free to message or email me. That would be just fine. Clicking that button will take you to my Patreon page, and then you can choose from various levels or however much you want to give. I would definitely welcome you with open arms into our Wellness Renaissance community. Of course, sharing this podcast with anybody who you think might find it helpful and useful also really does help the podcast. It helps get the word out. It helps make more people aware. And that is truly important. So thank you. Also, if you are an Amazon shopper, and I know for some people that is an important way for them to get the things that they need right now, it is a great way also to support the Wellness Renaissance podcast. It is a way that doesn't cost you any money, but a little portion of your purchases goes to Wellness Renaissance. And the way that you make that happen is going to the website, wellnessrenpodcast.com, and clicking on support the podcast, and you will get taken to a page that lists various items that we have talked about on the podcast that are sold on Amazon. So you can click into any one of those, and then whatever you purchase that day will go towards supporting the podcast, and you do not have to buy the item that you click on. There's some great stuff in there and some fantastic books, so you might wanna, but you don't have to. Thank you again. Take good care. Do all the things you're supposed to do. Wash your hands, social distance, keep yourself safe. And I hope through this journey that we're all on, that you're able to continue to find the pieces that fit into your health and wellness puzzle. As a matter of fact, there might be great opportunities right now to make some shifts and changes when our schedules are different, our lifestyles are different. Good can come out of this. I hope it does for you. Take good care, and we'll see you next time.